No doubt the forward squad were scanning the surroundings with infrared and heat sensors, looking for sneak attacks. All they would find were colonists, up and at their windows, staring into the darkness as the soldiers marched by. I could see in my binoculars that at least a couple of colonists stood on their porches to see the soldiers. Mennonites. They were pacifists, but they sure as hell weren't scared of anything. Croatone remained as it was when we had begun. A modern-day take on the Roman Legion camp, still ringed by two sets of cargo containers. Most of the colonists who had lived there had long abandoned it for homes and farms of their own, but a few people continued to live there, including me and Jane and Zoe, and several permanent buildings stood where the tents used to be. The recreation area at the center of the camp still remained, in front of a lane that passed along it and behind the administration building. In the center of the recreation area stood Savitri, alone. She would be the first human the Arisian soldiers and Esser would see, the only one, hopefully, that they would see. I could see Savitri from where I was. The early morning was not cold, but she was clearly shivering. The first of the Arisian soldiers reached the perimeter of Croatone and called a halt to the march as they examined the surroundings, to be sure they weren't walking into a trap. This took several minutes, but eventually they were satisfied that there was nothing there that could harm them. They restarted the march, and the Arisian soldiers tromped in, piling up in the recreation center, keeping a wary eye on Savitri, who stood there, silent and now shivering only a little. In a very short amount of time, all the soldiers were within the cargo container-lined borders of Croatone. Esser came up through the ranks with his guard and stood before Savitri. He motioned for a translator device.
"I am Nerbros Esser," he said.
"I'm Savitri Guntupalli," Savitri said.
"You're the leader of this colony," Esser said.
"No," Savitri said.
Esser's eye stalks jiggled at this.
"Where are this colony's leaders?" he asked.
"They're busy," Savitri said. "That's why they sent me out to talk to you."
"And who are you?" Esser said.
"I'm the secretary," Savitri said.
Esser's eye stalks extended angrily and almost banged together.
"I have the power to level this entire colony, and its leader sends his secretary to meet me," he said.
Clearly any hint of magnanimity Esser may have been planning in victory was flying right out the window.
"Well, they did give me a message for you," Savitri said.
"They did," Esser said.
"Yes," Savitri said. "I was told to tell you that if you and your troops were willing to get back into your ships and just go back where you came from, we'd be happy to let you live."
Esser goggled and then emitted a high scree, the Arisian noise for amusement. Most of his soldiers screed along with him. It was like a convention of angry bees. Then he stopped his scree and stalked right up to Savitri, who, like the star she is, didn't even flinch.
"I was planning to let most of your colonists survive," Esser said. "I was going to have this colony's leaders executed for the crimes against the Conclave when they helped the Colonial Union ambush our fleet. But I was going to spare your colonists. You are tempting me to change my mind on that."
"So, that's a no, then," Savitri said, staring directly into his eye stalks.
Esser stepped back and turned to one of his guards.
"Kill her," he said. "Then let's get to work."
The guard raised his weapon, sighted in on Savitri's torso, and tapped the trigger panel on his rifle. The rifle exploded, shearing vertically in the plane perpendicular to the rifle's firing mechanism, and sending a vertical planar array of energy directly upward. The guard's eye stalks intersected that plane and were severed. He fell, screaming in pain, clutching what remained of his stalks. Esser looked again at Savitri, confused.
"You should have left when you had the chance," Savitri said.
There was a bang as Jane kicked open the door of the administration building. The nanomesh suit that hid her body heat, covered by standard Department of Colonization police armor, same as the others of us in our little squad. In her arms was something that was not standard Department of Colonization issue. A flamethrower. Jane motioned Savitri back. Savitri didn't need to be told twice. From in front of Jane came the sound of Arisian screams as panicked soldiers tried to shoot her, only to have their rifles shear and erupt violently in their arms. Jane walked right up to the soldiers, who had begun to wheel back in fear, and poured fire into their midst.
What is this?
I asked Zoe, when she directed us into the shuttle to look at whatever it was she wanted us to look at. Whatever it was the size of a baby elephant. Hickory and Dickory stood next to it. Jane went to it and started to examine the control panel on one side.
"It's my present to the colony," Zoe said. "It's a sapper field."
"Zapper field," I said.
"No, sapper," Zoe said, "with a S."
"What does it do?" I asked. Zoe turned to Hickory.
"Tell him," she said.
"The sapper field channels kinetic energy," Hickory said. "Redirects the energy upward or any other direction the user chooses, and uses the redirected energy to feed the field itself. The user can define at what level the energy is redirected over a range of parameters."
You need to explain this to me like I'm an idiot," I said.
"Because clearly I am."
"It stops bullets," Jane said, still looking at the panel.
"Come again?"
I said.
"This thing generates a field that will suck the energy out of any object that goes faster than a certain speed," Jane said.
She looked at Hickory.
"That's right, isn't it?"
"Velocity is one of the parameters a user may define," Hickory said. "Other parameters can include energy output over a specified time or temperature."
"So we program it to stop bullets or grenades, and it will do it," I said.
"Yes," Hickory said. "Although it works better with physical objects than with energetic ones."
"Works better with bullets than with beams," I said.
"Yes," Hickory said.
"When we define the power levels, anything under that power level retains its energy," Jane said. "We could tune it to stop a bullet, but let an arrow fly."
"If the energy of the arrow is below the threshold you define, yes," Hickory said.
"This has possibilities," I said.
"I told you you would like it," Zoe said.
"This is the best present you ever got me, sweetheart," I said.
Zoe grinned.
"You should know that this field is of very limited duration," Hickory said. "The power source here is small and will only last a few minutes, depending on the size of the field you generate."
"If we use it to cover Croatoan, how long would it last?" I asked.
"About 7 minutes," Jane said.
She had figured out the control panel.
"Real possibilities," I said.
I turned back to Zoe.
"So how did you manage to get the Oban to give us this?" I asked.
"First I reasoned, then I bargained, then I pleaded," Zoe said. "And then I threw a tantrum."
"A tantrum, you say?"
I said.
"Don't look at me like that," Zoe said.
"The Oban are incredibly sensitive to my emotions. You know that. And the idea of every person I love and care about being killed is something I could get emotional about pretty easily. And on top of every other argument I made, it worked. So don't give me grief for it, 90-year-old Dad. Well, Hickory and Dickory and I were with General Gao. Other Oban got this for us."
I glanced back at Hickory.
"I thought you said you weren't allowed to help us because of your treaty with the Colonial Union."
"I regret to say that Zoe has made a small error in her explanation," Hickory said. "The sapper field is not our technology. It is far too advanced for that. It is Khonsu."
Jane and I looked at each other. Khonsu technology was generally breathtakingly advanced over the technology of other species, including our own, and Khonsu never parted lightly with any technology they possessed.
"The Khonsu gave this to you?" I asked.
"They gave it to you, in point of fact," Hickory said.
"And how did they know about us?" I asked.
In an encounter with some of our fellow Oban, the topic came up in conversation, and the Khonsu were moved to spontaneously offer you this gift, Hickory said.